On your drive from Brookfield to Chillicothe, you'll pass by a cluster of natural areas, each managed by a different state or federal agency, but all combined with the common goal of conservation. If you have a nature enthusiast in your car, your trip to Chillicothe might take a while. This small stretch of Highway 36 includes several thousand acres dedicated to public recreation and wildlife conservation. While these areas are the perfect places to stretch your legs on trails and wetland boardwalks, they aren't just beautiful places to have a picnic. Federal and state agencies manage these areas with strategic plans to combine conservation practices that provide food, water, and habitat for animals with ones that invite you to enjoy a day of hiking, boating, camping, hunting, or bird watching. 10 miles south of Acleed on Highway 139 is Swan Lake National Wildlife Refuge. Since 1947, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has managed this 10,795-acre refuge to provide nesting, resting, and feeding areas for ducks and geese. While waterfowl benefit from this area, other birds and animals benefit too. These public wetlands offer you the chance to see countless birds stop at these necessary refueling grounds as they make their annual migrations from around the world. Swan Lake's bird list contains 241 species. Rare birds like tundra swans and sand-hill cranes have been sighted here, and more than 100 wintering bald eagles use this area annually. Swan Lake is a primary wintering area for between 10 and 80,000 Canadian geese. That's why Sumner, the town 1 mile north of the refuge entrance, is known by some as the wild goose capital of the world. The town's city park features a giant goose statue, 40 feet tall with a wingspan of 65 feet. Maxie, named after the Latin name Branta canadensis maxima for giant Canada goose, is made of fiberglass rather than feathers. On windy days, the outspread wings lift and move and appear as if Maxie has decided to visit Swan Lake. Sumner has an annual goose festival on the third weekend of October to celebrate the return of their feathered friends. Just down the road from the giant goose, you can see a giant pecan, one that weighs 12,000 pounds. Brunswick is another town proud of nature's gifts and its claim to fame as the pecan capital of Missouri. You can get to Brunswick 30 miles south of Highway 36, down Highway 11, and then east on Highway 24. 3 million pounds of pecans are harvested each year in Sheridan County. It's no rival to the 100 million pounds that the state of Georgia harvests each year, but Missouri pecan growers claim that their northern pecans are sweeter by nature. Their smaller size and higher oil content give them a sweeter, richer flavor than southern pecans. The thriving pecan industry near Highway 36 has been attributed to the ingenuity of the James family. George and Elizabeth James discovered a thin-shell pecan on their farm in 1947. George and Elizabeth James discovered a thin-shell pecan on their farm in 1947. By 1955, they had patented the Starkey Hardy Giant, the pecan that began the boom in the pecan industry for this area. They started the Nut Hut, where travelers could stop by to taste their sweet pecans, and they built the world's largest pecan, 12 feet long with a 7-foot diameter, a famous local piece that's been visited by numerous travelers across the nation. Today, their children have kept their family farm thriving. When business started to wane, the younger James wrote a children's story about pecans, and now they use it to perform a stage show for farm visitors. Today, 10,000 pecan trees cover the hills of James Pecan Farm, a living family tribute, and the town celebrates with a pecan festival on the first weekend of every October. Back on Highway 36, just past McLeod on the south side of the highway, is the entrance to the Department of Natural Resources Pershing State Park, named for the famous general from McLeod. After driving just a few feet off the highway, the park's shady tree-lined entrance road will take you miles deep into a world of old bottomland forests, meandering streams, river bottom prairies, marshlands, and swamps. The park has several peaceful picnic sites where you can open up your cooler, or if you want to stay a bit longer, you can camp out among the oaks and hickories with the luxury of restrooms, showers, and a laundry facility nearby. The 1.5-mile boardwalk will leave you under towering trees and just sits above the wet forest floor. After a heavy rain, the boardwalk is most impressive when the waterlogged forest floats only a few inches below your footsteps. You can also walk parts of the 6.5-mile riparian trail. Both trails will fill your senses with shades of green, the color of seasonal wildflowers, the smell of water mixed with cool leaves, and the blending songs of beautiful birds. Just past Pershing State Park on Highway 36, you'll see a sign for the Locust Creek Covered Bridge on the north side of the road. Built in 1868, this bridge once housed the nation's first transcontinental road, Route 8. Today, it's the longest of the four remaining bridges, measuring 151 feet. Turn north at the highway sign and drive 1 mile to get to the site's parking lot. A short quarter-mile gravel-covered walk will take you to the entrance of this historic gateway. More migrating birds and other wildlife can be seen at Fountain Grove Conservation Area on Highway W, 5.25 miles south of Highway 36. The Missouri Department of Conservation manages this area with these goals in mind: to protect and manage the fish, forests, and wildlife resources of the state, to offer hunting and fishing opportunities to the public, and to educate others about these resources. The quiet lakes of Fountain Grove offer a place to launch a lazy canoe or a more determined fishing boat. Their fields offer hunting of designated mammals and birds, with 7,000 acres that provide a resting and feeding ground for migrating birds. At the intersection of Highway 36 and Highway 65, you'll come to Chillicothe. Undoubtedly, you've heard the phrase, "This is the greatest thing since sliced bread." Well, it all started here in Chillicothe, when the Chillicothe Baking Company took a chance on a young inventor. Otto Rohwedder from Iowa invented the sliced bread machine. He enticed Chillicothe baker Frank Bench to use the invention and sell this new idea on his wholesale bakery shelves and to the local grocery stores he supplied. The first loaves were called sliced clean-made bread. In the first few weeks, this new convenience increased sales by 2,000% in local grocery stores, making it a hit, and the rest, as they say, is history. Since its debut on July 7, 1928, sliced bread has been an invention that is synonymous with progress and innovation. That same spirit is evident in this progressive community today. Art brings history alive in Chillicothe as more than 20 larger-than-life historic murals brighten the historic downtown district. Each mural celebrates a different aspect of history, such as the Chillicothe Business College, the invention of the Jenkins Hayraker, and the city's trained agricultural and commerce heritage. The Grand River Historical Society Museum, located on Forest Drive, also interprets the area's history. The museum allows visitors to step up to an old railroad depot counter, just as several other passengers along this corridor once did, then take a trip inside to learn about the people of Livingston County. Also, there's an array of palate-pleasing options, including several charming downtown cafes and the Wabash Barbecue, an authentic Kansas City-style barbecue in a renovated train depot. It seems fitting to stop and have a sandwich on sliced bread, of course, here in Chillicothe. While future General John J. Pershing was tending to his boyhood chores in McLeod, another famous military general was spending his youth just down the road in Trenton, located 23 miles north of Chillicothe on Highway 65. Major General Enoch H. Crowder grew up in Grundy County and is most remembered for supervising the first military draft in the United States in 1917. As Provost Marshal of the Army, Crowder led the selective service and organized the draft of all American men who were between the ages of 18 and 30. He registered, classified, and inducted more than 2.8 million men during the war, Hershey and Crowder, born only 1 year apart and 45 miles away from each other, were destined to meet up later in life. Crowder was the supervisor of the first United States draft who supplied the troops to General Pershing, commander of the American forces in France. A New York Times article on September 18, 1918, quoted a letter from Crowder to Pershing saying,
"The nation responded yesterday with an enrollment which promises to exceed all estimates, thus ensuring an uninterrupted flow of manpower to the army under your command."
Just outside the city limits is Crowder State Park. The park includes more than 1,900 acres of rolling hills and deep ravines where visitors can hike, camp, picnic, fish, swim, or just relax beside an 18-acre lake. The park also includes the first permanent residence built in Grundy County, constructed in 1834 by William Thompson. Back in Trenton, the Grundy County Museum features a military room where campaign medals, uniforms and weapons tell of the sacrifices made by our armed forces. The museum presents the life experiences of Trenton's past, from tools to technology to transportation. One of the most famous items is a wooden dugout canoe that was uncovered on the banks of the Thompson River, where it was buried for nearly 300 years. From Pershing State Park to Crowder State Park, this stretch of Highway 36 takes travelers through a land of ingenious generals and cunning conservation. From Chillicothe, Highway 190 will take you to Jamesport, the home of the largest Amish community in Missouri. Like the Christian colony in Bethel and Heartland in Newark, this is another community guided by their faith. In the early 1950s, the Amish immigrated to Jamesport, and today, around 175 families still live on this rich farmland. The town flourished in the 19th century until the railroad across Missouri moved south through Kansas City, leaving towns like Jamesport off the beaten path to slowly fade into history. Although Jamesport didn't fade, instead, it has created a community that invites others to step into history and see the individual craftsmanship and daily life of working farms before the age of industrialism. Tourists can buy homemade furniture, tools, and food from this Amish community, plus, with these superior quality handcrafted purchases, they'll also receive a nostalgic slice of agricultural history. The Old Order Amish are direct descendants of the Mennonite Anabaptists, a group that formed during the Reformation in Germany and Switzerland. In the late 1600s, guided by founder Jacob Ammon, the Amish arose as a distinct community of believers whose lives were harshly governed by biblical law. In the 1720s, the first group of Amish immigrated to America seeking religious tolerance and good farmland. Today, there are Amish settlements in 48 states and Canada. The Amish seek separation from the superficiality of society and from the impact of media. They live in modest homes on rural farms. Their peaceful lifestyle revolves around a close-knit family, the discipline of their faith, and the utilization of the land, all of which can be seen as you travel the rolling hills and countryside around Jamesport. While the Amish find it acceptable to travel in cars, they cannot own them. Cars may separate the closeness of family. Rather, horse-drawn vehicles take families to and from town. So, along these roads, travel slowly and respectfully. It's easy to admire this strong faith-based community, both disciplined in an age-old faith and innovative in retaining a focus on family among the turbulence of technology today. Along this stretch of Highway 36 between present-day Cameron and Chillicothe, another devoted religious community once settled, but their search for peace ended in violence. In 1830, Joseph Smith Jr., founder of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, led his followers to Independence, Missouri. Latter-day Saints began to settle in Jackson County to build up this city of Zion. Unfortunately, as large numbers of Mormons moved into the area, Missouri settlers did not welcome them. It was believed that the Mormon community was a control threat for their area. Locals began to harass the newcomers, and in October of 1833, anti-Mormon vigilantes forced the Mormons out of Jackson County and up north to new colonies along present-day Highway 36. In an effort to calm the friction between the settlers and Mormons, the Missouri legislature designated Caldwell County specifically for Mormon settlement. Thousands of Mormon members followed their faith to this county, but as they arrived, settler mob attacks began escalating. In 1838, after Mormons confronted a militia they mistakenly believed was an anti-Mormon mob, Governor Milburn Boggs ordered the Mormons expelled from the state, or, if necessary, to be exterminated. Only 2 years after Joseph Smith brought his people to Far West, they were forced to leave again, this time to a new colony in Nauvoo, Illinois. Nowhere was this order more impactful than at the Hansville Colony, established the same year as Far West, which was located south of Highway 36 along Shoal Creek. On October 30, 1838, an angry mob stormed the colony and killed 18 Mormon men and boys. 14 of the bodies were buried in an unfinished well. Today, the mills, pond, blacksmith shop, and well have all vanished, but a historical marker recalls what should not be forgotten. In downtown Breckenridge, just north of Highway 36 on Highway M, the millstone from Hans Mill sits behind a commemorative marker that tells the story of this ill-fated colony. About 5 miles before you reach Cameron, you'll see a sign that says, Far West. This is the site where in 1836, Joseph Smith Jr. brought his followers and began constructing the town that he had hoped for in independence. This became the headquarters for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. It was here that he changed the name of the church from the Church of Christ to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Take Highway Z south for about 7 miles to see the site where this staunch community once existed, the cornerstone of their temple, and to read the monument that tells the story of their powerful faith. Just ahead is Hamilton, a city that tells the story of a famous rags-to-riches entrepreneur who was born here, started his first business here, and became one of the greatest retail chain geniuses in the country. James Taft Penney, better known as J.C. Penney, was born here in 1875, only 20 years after the founding of the town. The seventh of 12 children, he was expected at an early age to do his part to financially support the family. By age 10, he had already begun nurturing his entrepreneurial roots by earning wages selling pigs, running errands, and collecting and reselling items. His early family days here in Hamilton built a foundation for his business practices later in life. He believed that respecting and honoring the customer was of the utmost importance. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. This golden rule was the code of business ethics that was the foundation for Penny Stores. The first chain of stores he managed in 1902 went by that very name. Penny said,
in setting up a business under the name and meaning of the Golden Rule, I was publicly binding myself in my business relations to a principle which had been a real and intimate part of my family's upbringing. Our idea was to make money and build business in serving the community with fair dealing and honest value. Courteous treatment will make a customer a walking advertisement.
In 1912, Penny changed the name of his store to the one we recognize today. That year, there were 34 J.C. Penney stores in the western United States. Penney continued his active involvement in managing the company and its stores until 1946. Even after his retirement, he remained as honorary chairman until his death at age 95 in 1971. Penney was an inspiration and model for future retail moguls. For example, in 1940, during a visit to a store in Des Moines, Iowa, he trained a young Sam Walton how to wrap packages with a minimal amount of ribbon. Penny never forgot his roots in Hamilton either. Over the years, he would often return to help finance buildings such as the first library, the shoe factory, and the high school. Rather than coming home with a superstar attitude, he would visit stores and sometimes humbly pick up a broom and help sweep up, or spend time helping customers, thereby exemplifying that golden rule that made him a genius in his profession. You can learn more about Penny at the Jason Penney Museum and Home in downtown Hamilton. Here you can see some of his personal items, early JCPenney store memorabilia, and learn more about his incredible contributions to American retail. Just 13 miles up the road in Gallatin is the historic Davies County Rotary Jail and Sheriff's Residence, one of only six Rotary Jails ever built in the United States. The octagonal structure was built in 1888 and houses eight pie-shaped cells. Each cell was divided by iron plate walls, and each had a doorway, but no door. Entrance to each cell was gained by rotating the inner cylinder using a hand crank squirrel cage. The jail closed in 1975, but is now renovated and tours are given by the Davies County Historical Society. While this jail structure is extraordinary, it's also famous for being the place where Frank James, brother of Jesse James, was imprisoned towards the end of his outlaw career. In Winston, 11 miles west of Gallatin on Highway 6, you can visit the Winston Historical Society and Rock Island Depot Museum, which houses items related to the James gang and their next-to-last train robbery. On July 17, 1881, as the Chicago, Rock Island, and Pacific rolled into Winston, the James brothers boarded the train. When the train engineer refused to cooperate, they killed him and the passenger and left with $500, a small sum compared to their other robberies. For a decade, railway passengers across the Midwest had to travel with the fear of these outlaws. Finally, Governor Thomas Crittenden issued a $10,000 reward for both Jesse and his brother Frank. The reward was the highest thus far in U.S. history. Jesse was killed for this reward in St. Joseph in 1882, and Frank surrendered to the governor that same year. He was tried in Gallatin and held in the Davies County Jail for the Winston robbery, plus an army payroll heist in Alabama. Amazingly, he was acquitted, largely on the testimony of his former Confederate commander. Frank lived 33 more years doing odd jobs, lecturing, and giving tours on the family farm near Kearney, where he died at age 72 in 1915. When you reach the intersection of Highway 36 and Interstate 35, you're entering the crossroads of the nation, Cameron, Missouri. Cameron was once known as the crossroads of the railway for steam-powered trains puffing along the Hannibal to St. Joseph line and for other trains heading north from Kansas City. Plans for the Hannibal to St. Joseph Railroad, the first railroad across the state, came from two Cameron engineers. In 1859, the railroad was completed, and it was because of this railroad that St. Joseph was chosen for the site of the Pony Express headquarters. This railroad is the reason why Cameron and several other towns along Highway 36 came into existence and prospered. You can learn more about Cameron's important role in Missouri transportation history at the Cameron Historical Society and Depot Museum, located at the corner of 2nd and Walnut Street. The museum chronicles the history of Cameron, the construction of the railroad, and the days when Cameron was a railroad crossroads with three stations and 44 trains passing through daily. If you get a chance to pass through Cameron on a Thursday night in the summer, head to downtown's McCorkle Park. That's where you'll hear the historic Cameron City Band play in the Thomas Price Pavilion. This band was formed in 1866 and remains one of the few bands in America that's supported by a city band tax passed in 1929. Believe it or not, the band was once featured in Ripley's Believe It or Not. Plus, McCorkle Park also includes a fireman's memorial displaying a 1929 Studebaker fire truck and the Blarney Stone, which honors Cameron's Irish ancestry. Just 8 miles south of Cameron, off of Interstate 35, is a 300-foot-long wooden footbridge people can walk across at Wallace State Park. The park was established in 1932 as part of President Roosevelt's Works Progress Administration. The 501-acre park offers four campgrounds, hiking trails, swimming, and fishing. Thank you. just west of Cameron, you have the opportunity to sample some of the best chocolate milk in the world and to see how the Chateau family has turned the process of getting a glass of milk into a delicious and educational tour at the Chateau Milk Company. This family dairy farm has been around since the mid-1800s. You could take the 90-minute tour of their farm, or just pick up treats for the road from their country store, all just 4 miles south of Highway 36 on Highway 33 in Osborne. In 2003, Barbara and Leroy Chateau took their family farm and created the Chateau Milk Company. The cows they raise are the same ones who provide the milk they process and turn into a variety of dairy products. Hundreds of people tour their farm every year, and while you're there, you feel like part of the family. On the tour, you can pet the baby calves, milk a cow, tour the processing plant, see how they fill their trademark glass bottles, and the best part, sample their ice cream, butter, strawberry milk, or eggnog. Chateau Milk Company has created a variety of milk flavors, including banana, root beer, and strawberry, and in 2009, their chocolate milk was voted by the World Dairy Expo as one of the top three in the world. In an age when family farms are slowly disappearing, Barbara and Leroy Chateau have kept their ancestral farm alive by welcoming visitors onto their property, inviting them to try their hand at a few daily chores, and creating a business that exemplifies that milk doesn't come from the back room of a store. They continue to expand the family business and recently began producing cheese from their resident cows. You can look for their milk in their famous glass jugs in Kansas City, St. Joseph, or maybe even at a local convenience store along your Highway 36 journey. Just south of Highway 36 on Highway 33 is the hometown of a former U.S. president, at least according to the people of Plattsburgh, Missouri. No, it's not Harry Truman, it's David Rice Atchison. Sure, history books may not list a President Atchison, but many from this northern Missouri town believe Mr. Atchison was the United States president for one full day in 1849. Here's the theory. Atchison was president pro tem of the U.S. Senate, which at that time meant he was third in line to become U.S. president. Today, the third in line is the Speaker of the House of Representatives. President-elect Zachary Taylor was to be sworn in on Sunday, March 4, 1849, but he didn't, and neither did Vice President-elect Millard Fillmore. Both men refused to take the oath because the ceremony fell on the Sabbath, and because the term of the outgoing Vice President, George Dallas, ended the same Sunday, March 4th at noon, then technically, Mr. Atchison was the United States President for a 24-hour period until Taylor was officially sworn in on Monday. So, what did Atchison accomplish during his one-day reign? Not much. In fact, Atchison said he slept most of Sunday and joked that he at least did no harm. While his name doesn't appear on any list of U.S. presidents, his name lives on in the town of Atchison, Kansas, and ultimately the Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe Railroad. You could learn more about Atchison at the Clinton County Courthouse. A statue of him stands out front with a plaque explaining his short presidency, and on the lower level of the courthouse, you can learn more about this famous man and his famous day in Missouri history. Along your journey today, you will travel through strong faith-based communities, which include Amish, Mormons, Catholics, and Christians. A trip north off of Highway 36 will take you to the first of these communities. Off of Highway 71, 45 miles north in Nottoway County, is Conception Abbey, a Roman Catholic monastery of the Swiss American Congregation of the Benedictine Confederation. This monastery was elevated to an abbey in 1881. The community includes monks who celebrate the Eucharist and liturgy of the hours daily and whose staff administer Conception Seminary College. Monks also serve as parish priests and hospital chaplains in the Roman Catholic Diocese of Kansas City St. Joseph and other dioceses. The Basilica of the Immaculate Conception is the heart of Conception Abbey. The monks gather here 6 times a day for prayer and mass. Renovated in 1999, it contains one of the world's best collections of Buranese art, exemplified in the murals that adorn its walls. The murals were painted by Benedictine monks trained in Buron, Germany in the late 19th century. The monks of Conception Abbey praise God through their humanity. Some are writers who practice the art of calligraphy and design Christian greeting cards. A few are musicians who blend their voices and instruments in praise. Others are sculptors, painters, woodworkers, or historians. And at least one is an avid astronomer who, for those who stay here on retreat, will eagerly set up his telescope for you to view the celestial heavens in the rural sky. The monks welcome all guests to stop by their monastery for the day and invite people to stay overnight for one of their spiritual retreats or workshops they offer. Visitors can also stop by their printery house, where the purchases of their handcrafted Christian art, cards, and other items will help support their abbey and college. At the edge of the state, you'll arrive in St. Joseph. St. Joseph is famously known as the place where the legendary Pony Express began and the life of the notorious outlaw Jesse James ended. Here in 1826, along the banks of the Missouri River, fur trader Joseph Roubidoux established the Black Snake Hills Trading Post. A wise entrepreneur, he shrewdly situated his business on the edge of Indian territory, so he could barter with local tribes for beaver pelts and other furs. His successful enterprise attracted the first settlers to these river bluffs, which allowed Roubidoux to eventually establish and design the city of St. Joseph. To this very day, Roubidoux's stature and importance is easily found, as several streets in downtown St. Joseph are named after his family members. For a better look, take I-229 North to Exit 7. Once there, you can enjoy the beautiful Missouri Riverwalk or stand on the banks of Lloyd Grant, the creek where Roubidoux first began business. To learn even more about Roubidoux and the natural history of the area, visit the Remington Nature Center, one of many places in St. Joseph that provide links to the past. The city is also home to 13 museums and has more than 50 listings on the National Register of Historic Places. You can enter downtown St. Joseph from Exit 6A on I-229 North or from the 10th Street exit on Highway 36 to visit the Pony Express Museum, Katy House Museum, and the residence where Jesse James breathed his last breath on April 3rd, 1882. Coincidentally, on the same date, April 3rd, but 22 years earlier in 1860, the genius of three men resulted in a faster way to communicate with people living hundreds of miles away. Alexander Majors, William H. Russell, and William B. Waddell launched the Pony Express, the quickest and most direct way to relay mail across Indian Territory to California. Riders successfully delivered the mail in 10 days, a huge improvement over the time it took ocean steamers or stagecoaches to deliver it. Today, you can stand at the doors of the stable where Johnny Fry left on the inaugural day, plus see and hear in an interactive panorama the entire story of this amazing venture. As the crowd surrounded the stables that morning in 1860, Major M. Jeff Thompson, who would become the Confederate general known as the Swamp Fox, exclaimed, "This is a great day in the history of St. Joseph. For more than a decade, she's been the portal to this past the wagon trains for the Great West. Now she's become a connecting link between the extremes of the continent. For the first time in the history of America, mail will go by an overland route from east to west. Citizens of St. Joseph, I bid you three cheers for the Pony Express. Three cheers for the first overland passage of the United States mail." At the Pity House, you can see the headquarters of the Pony Express and get a clearer picture about all the incredible people who called St. Joseph home, like Native Walter Cronkite and Jane Wyman. You could read about Eugene Field's famous Lover's Lane while you explore a replica street of old St. Joe, or get the story of the St. Joseph original, Aunt Jemima Pancakes. The Pity House also offers visitors a chance to step inside the home where the outlaw Jesse James was shot in the back by a member of his own gang in order to collect a ransom from then-Governor Crittenden. Also in downtown St. Joseph is the National Military Heritage Museum. Inside is a wide collection of uniforms, weapons, medals, vehicles, and exhibits honoring all branches of the U.S. military. Visitors can walk inside a dark World War I observational trench while the surrounding sounds of explosions and a binocular view video of field combat transports them into battle. Visitors can climb aboard a Huey helicopter or spend a moment of silence next to a piece of the former World Trade Center. A trip down Frederick Avenue will take you to historic Mount Morris Cemetery. Established in 1851, Mount Morris Cemetery has an entire street of ornate mausoleums and is the final resting place of three state governors, notable early entrepreneurs, and wealthy citizens of St. Joseph. Further down Frederick Avenue is the Albright Kemper Museum of Art, where you can enjoy American art at its finest. Just a few doors down at the St. Joseph Museum complex, you can view an expansive collection of Native American artifacts. Tour the Black Archives, which is an African American museum, or visit the Glory Psychiatric Museum, considered to be one of the 50 most unusual museums in America. There you can see primitive devices used to restrain and calm patients, with other intriguing scenes and stories, like when 1,000 metal objects were found in one patient's stomach. If you're a football fan visiting the area in July and August, you might want to stop by the Kansas City Chiefs Summer Training Camp, located on the campus of Missouri Western State University. North of Highway 36 along Interstate 29, you can travel through the lush hills of northwest Missouri. Wind-blown soil from ancient glaciers form the bluff along this highway, and today, giant turbines harness this wind power, turning it into electricity for thousands of people across the state. Wind Capital Group, managed by Thomas Carnahan, son of the late Governor Mel Carnahan, operates Missouri's first commercial wind farm. This impressive farm was built in Gentry County, about 25 miles north of Highway 36 on Route 169, north of King City. 27 turbines, three of which produce electricity specifically for the city of Columbia, turn their football field-length blades above the corn stalk. Wind Capital, along with business partner John Deere, planted 24 turbines on farmland in Conception and 24 more in Rockport. The city of Rockport itself owns a set of 4 turbines through partnership with Wind Capital Group and John Deere. Rockport, with a population of approximately 1,300 people, is the first city in the United States to be 100% wind energy powered. The energy produced by these wind turbines is sold to Associated Electric Cooperatives Incorporated, Missouri's rural electric cooperative. Rockport's neighbor, the city of Tarpeo, also has a 72-turbine energy farm owned by the Spanish wind energy company, Iberdrola. These northwest prairies are the best location in the state for this conservation of wind energy, and over the years, this ideal area will be most important for clean and innovative ways to keep the lights on in Missouri. These winds not only give power to the people, they also give flight to thousands of ducks and geese, and even some bald eagles, which travel north and south across Highway 36 throughout the season. From river to river, Highway 36 takes travelers on a journey through small towns that inspire greatness. Towns founded by coal and commerce and the blast of a train's whistle, and by communities gathered in a common faith. Highway 36 also takes travelers through stories of innovation and entrepreneurship, to the Pony Express stables, to the home of sliced bread, and to fields converted for conservation. Highway 36 features stories of some of America's most outstanding individuals, to Walt Disney's wishing tree, to General John J. Pershing's boyhood home, to Mark Twain's Mississippi, and the setting for the greatest stories he ever wrote. In Twain's book, Life on the Mississippi, he describes his beloved boyhood river by saying,
"The face of the water, in time, became a wonderful book, a book that was a dead language to the uneducated passenger, which told its mind to me without reserve. delivering its most cherished secrets as clearly as if it had uttered them with a voice. And it was not a book to be read once and thrown aside, for it had a new story to tell every day.
We hope you enjoyed your drive today, and that with each journey you take across it, the communities around you will open up like a wonderful book, offering new stories for you to share along Highway 36, the way of American genius.